John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline, Larry Sohn from the Seattle Times. Before we start talking about the Mariner injury situation, got to ask you about the decision that came down. And by the way, you're talking about being on the same page. Roger Goodell and the league announcing it was a unanimous decision. Jed York just came out a few minutes ago and said he's for the San Francisco 49ers. He says, hey, I abstained from voting. So I guess it wasn't a unanimous decision, but the decision is that for the national anthem, here comes the rules, is that anybody that's going to disrespect or not stand for the national anthem or raise a fist, they have to stay in the locker room. Okay, it's a team decision. If somebody goes on the field and either raises his fist, does not stand for the anthem, the team is subject to a fine, and the team would have the ability to levy a fine against the player or have some kind of a discipline. Players Association just came out with a statement saying, hey, we weren't at the table, we weren't involved in this, and we'll have to look to see how this complies with the CBA. The situation, I don't know, got better. It may not, it could have gotten worse, but I don't think it got better.
No, John, I agree with you. I mean, that's something that they should have consulted with the Players Association, don't you think? I mean, it's just going to lead to more rancor and disagreements in the players. I think there's going to be players who are going to defy this, it's certainly not going to put this issue to bed, I don't think.
No, because, I mean, what is, and I know if a majority of the players in the team, you know, want to say, okay, I want to make a statement in this game and decide that they're not going to be on the field for the national anthem. Now, again, the best option would have been don't have the players have that decision. Don't have the owners have to worry about it. Just go back to the original rule before 2010 and just have the players in the locker room, not having to just concentrating on the game, not trying to make a social statement. And you don't have the fans upset. You don't have the military upset, policemen upset, you name it, but they've left themselves vulnerable to that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've been one who have supported the players on this, but I think it's, you know, my feeling has kind of evolved on this. I think it's time to move on, and that the statement has been made. I think at this point there's other ways to express your legitimate concerns over social injustice and that sort of thing, and this is just gonna exacerbate the problem.
No problem. So, but that's the ruling that came down today, and it was a vote, I guess, technically of 31 in favor with one abstaining. And of course, Jed York, owner of the 49ers, has two players, former players, that are involved with not even getting on jobs and is suing the league, and that's Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick. All right, Mariners continue to win despite the injuries, and I don't know. There's like no outfielders left. We'll find out how bad it's going to be. But Nelson Cruz is still banged up. Now he has an elbow injury. They lose Gordon because he has the foot problem. You know, two guys get hurt last night. What's left?
Well, I know. I think they're going to have to make a move. I mean, I saw that Nelson Cruz actually volunteered to play the outfield, which is a terrible idea. He could barely move as it is. And, he's nursing a couple of injuries. It sounds like Jason Worth could be on the way. Taylor Motter could be on the way, one or the other, or maybe even both. So there are, there are reinforcements coming, but, someone like Haniger may be too banged up to play, but not banged up enough to go on the DL. So you're going to be playing short for a couple of days. Who knows what Segura hurt himself scoring last night on that, the game-winning run. So, this whole thing seems to be kind of galvanizing the team. When the Cano injury / suspension happened, the team could go two ways. They could have it could have been a real downer for them, and they could have gone in the tank, or they could have kind of rallied around it, and that definitely seems to be what they've done to their credit. They've played great ball since he went out, and then you added Gordon to the DL list yesterday, and they won again, so I think they're starting to get a little feeling that us against the world kind of thing, that sometimes teams can use to fuel them.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's the amazing part. I mean, what is it now, 13 come-from-behind victories, and you know they continue to do it on a consistent basis. I mean, now they seem to be in this little mode where they'll be shut out for about five, six, seven innings, and then the third time around they start to come through and get things done. But then, you know, what you, they have 12 position players on the roster, and they have four that are injured right now, and they were down to three outfielders, and if Haniger's not able to go, they're down to two. And I think you're right. I mean, you'd have to think that Jason Worth is going to be coming up at the expense of somebody on the 40-man roster, and you have to be able to put it out, but at some point it's got to catch up to you.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Robinson Cano is such a valuable player to them that his absence for 80 games, it's going to be felt somewhere along the line. And D. Gordon is such an energizer for this team. I think you could stave off the downslide for a little while. At some point, it is going to catch up to you. But, they do have the opportunity now with the money that they saved from Cano's contract to pick up a player of some stature, which I'm sure that Jerry is looking into doing. In my opinion, I think the area they need to focus on is the pitching. I think they, it doesn't sound like Haniger's injury is serious. He'll be back within a few days, I think. And D. Gordon, they don't think is serious as well. So, you know, I think when it Cruz is on his way back, I think within the next week or two, they'll be back to something approaching full strength other than Cano. To me, what they need to target is helping, one good shutdown reliever, and this team is pretty set in the bullpen, I think. And, I think you can look for to augment the rotation as well. That's what I think that the focus should be in. Despite this rash of injuries right now, I think they can get by the position player wise.
Mm-hmm. Although here's the, and I guess this shows you now the weaknesses in the minor leagues. I mean, what they've got 12 players on the 25 man roster, position players, and four of them are hurt, and so now you can have Daniel Vogelbach as your designated hitter filling in for Nelson Cruz when he's out there. But when you're down to possibly two healthy outfielders, and you look at the 40-man roster, and there's like nobody else there. You know, you're right. It's like a 39-year-old Jason Worth, or it's going to be somebody else, and that will cost them a pitcher just to bring him on the 40-man.
Yeah, I mean Gordon Beckham, I guess, could probably be designated for assignment.
Yeah.
When D. Gordon...
Although, again, they're down two second basemen, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they might want to hold off on that. But, at some point, he became expendable when Gordon moved to second. And they got to really cross their fingers on that one and hope that Gordon is not out for a month or something like that with a broken toe. But, yeah, I mean, there's no secret to the fact that their farm system is barren right now, and that's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt them doubly, for reinforcements and for trade bait. And, that's the position that they've put themselves in by trading a lot of prospects to get guys that are helping them right now. But, at times like this, they do have some outfielders down there that have some major league experience, but nobody that's going to really, blow you away. As far as like young prospects knocking on the door to the major leagues, they just don't have those. I mean, Vogelbach is as close as you come, and he's a very limited defensive player, but he's looking much better at the plate right now. But once Cruz gets healthy, it's hard to see where he figures into this. So there's definitely going to be more maneuvering coming.
Well, which even brings up the question, can Cruz get healthy? Because he's had the leg injuries, he can't move very well, and now he's got a little bit of an elbow strain. I mean, age may be starting to catch up with him a little bit. You'd hope not, but, I mean, what, fourth in team in home runs. What concern are there with Nelson?
Well, yeah. I mean, he has been hobbled now for a couple of years, I think. I think a lot of his problem is the pitchers that keep finding him, which is a team-wide problem. The Mariners are getting hit by too many pitches, and I know there's a clamor for some retaliation at some point, and I'm not an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of guy, but you do have to, I think, as a staff, you do have to, I mean, that's just sort of the law of baseball. You have to establish that you're not going to allow other teams to do that to you. You know, they've got two or three guys that have been, including Cano, that have been hurt by hit by pitches. And at some point, I think you've got to sort of retaliate a little bit for that. And, you know, Cruz is reaching that age where your body tends to betray you, and that's definitely something to watch. He's in the last year of his contract, and I think that will definitely be a factor as you consider whether you want to re-up with him.
Of course, I guess, you know, it's not going to get to the point where they're going to call Divish up and put him in the outfield, so at least it may be safe in that regard. But it's getting almost to the point where he may have to be called up. Hey, Larry Stone, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline.
All right, well, I think Divish would be more comfortable behind the plate, though, with that body, so we'll...
Yeah, that's true. Or at least, you know, going to Dino's and trying to get in some of the other stuff that you do over there at Dino's, particularly with all the good stuff, with all the knowledge. So, hey, thank you so much, Larry.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Larry Stone joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Yeah, because I know that both Larry is into trivia with Ryan Divish, and they always compete whenever they get a chance. But right now, Divish is too busy writing injury reports. Hey, we'll come back and, of course, go and find out what the grade book says. We'll be grading things that are going on. It's the John Clayton Show at 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Report Card with the Professor.
And, of course, the report card we do at 11:15 every day as we try to grade the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the dumb, the crazy, all those things that are going on in sports, which, of course, is a very busy time with playoffs going on, finishing up in hockey, NBA, and, of course, baseball going on with all the injuries of the Mariners, Seahawks, of course, as every team in their OTAs. And so, Mara, what do we have?
Well, first up here, Robert Kraft was talking to reporters at the spring meetings and was asked about, you know, a little bit of drama that seems to be going on here in the offseason with Gronkowski and Brady both not in camp, and Brady pretty much known for being there for all the voluntary workouts in the almost 20 years he's been with the Patriots. But Kraft kind of tried to say that nothing's changed.
Because so many people, because Tom hasn't been there, there's so much speculation that there is some type of rift going on between him and Coach Belichick or whomever. The relationship, for your opinion, between those two and ownership and everything, is it all good?
From my point of view, nothing's changed. Everything is good, and I think he's very excited about coming back, and I know we're excited to have him. And we look forward to a great football season.
Okay, so let's minimize the problem. Let's not let's ignore the problem and say there's no issue. It's like the only quarterback in football who's not at his OTAs is the best quarterback in the league. The only quarterback who's not at the OTAs is now like the 16th to 18th highest paid quarterback in the league. The only quarterback who's not at the OTAs has a trainer that was kicked out of the facility. The only quarterback who's not there is one that when asked questions takes the fifth, does all these different things. You can see there's a problem, and of course Bob Kraft's trying to minimize it, but there's a problem there. And so I have to give Bob a C minus, because it's like he's trying to just pass over what is an issue. I mean, I know in the big picture it's still, I mean, you know, Tom is going to show up for the mini camp, but in the meantime you're basically, offense is stuck in neutral. I mean, you're working with Brian Hoyer and a seventh round quarterback, and you know what I'm wondering about is that there's always going to be a lingering effect with the Seahawks and the play, you know, with Daryl Bevel calling the pass in the game against the New England Patriots. You know there's going to be a lingering effect that is negative for the Atlanta Falcons blowing a 20-some point lead in the Super Bowl to the New England Patriots. I'm now feeling that there's a lingering effect from this and other things with the Patriots not playing Malcolm Butler, losing the Super Bowl, not giving Tom Brady another Super Bowl ring, and then not giving Tom Brady the money. So it's like you may say there's no problem. There's a problem. Is it fixable? Yeah, Brady will be there for mini camp, he'll be there for training camp, and he'll be there for the season. But to say there's no problem, come on, man.
Yeah, do I expect him to be a professional and show up and them to probably still be one of the better teams in the AFC? Yes, but to say that nothing's changed is just complete denial.
Exactly. Well, it's not denial. I mean, I'm sure he's not denying it. He's just denying it publicly. He's trying to pass over it, and to try to pass over it is not, you know, being genuine with the reality of what people are looking at, because, hey, if things were fine, he'd be there.
I agree. Also, Aaron Rodgers spoke with Rob Domofsky from ESPN.com, the Packers reporter, about the possibility of Dez Bryant coming there.
How do you think you guys are at receiver, and what could another guy, if you brought somebody in like that, what kind of dynamic would that be?
Well, we'd like young receivers, so I'm assuming that's the way they're going to keep going. I don't know why you'd cut Jordy and bring in Dez. But, you know, he's down at Blair. He's end up somewhere.
Ringing endorsement.
Like yeah, really. I mean, GM Aaron Rodgers still seems to be bitter about the Jordy Nelson release, still bitter about the fact that Alex Van Pelt's not his quarterback coach, and now he's taking the GM role on the team by saying that, hey, well, it looks like we're going to go with young guys, and so if that's the case, why do we need Dez Bryant? So I have to kind of give him, you know, I would give him a B if it's just a matter of him saying, let's not bring Dez in the team, because, again, I don't think they need the all the tantrums and all the problems and stuff like that. But I have to give him a C because I think you can still see in the back of his mind, you know, he is still bitter about not being consulted on any of the things going on with the team, not being consulted about the quarterback coaching change, not being consulted about Jordy Nelson being there. And I had to give him bad grades for that way he handled that. So that's why I have to kind of give him a C. Although, again, the idea of Dez Bryant on the on this team, I just think would be a bad idea. So B for the thought, but C in reality.
All right, and last up here, Professor, we have you spoke with Al Riveron on the podcast this week, School with the Professor, which is coming out at 4 today, to get some more clarity on all of the many rule changes and adjustments this offseason in the NFL. But Golic was speaking about it on his show this morning, Mike Golic, and said that no matter what they do, they're never going to be able to make the game safe.
We know where this is leading to if some of these changes don't work. They're going to get rid of the kickoff. I mean, because when you track, and it's easy to track the injuries, when you're seeing a decent amount of your injuries happen on these type of plays, you either try and improve them or make them so they're going to be less these you know, crash dummy test shots. Or test dummies, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Crash dummy. Crash test dummies.
To try and get that out of the game. And it is more like a punt, more like running alongside of a guy and shouldering a guy. Now, the issue is going to be if somebody on the kickoff team who now has to line up where the ball is and doesn't get a running head start, what if they still get by that guy? Then they're still running free, and there is still the potential for a big hit. But you can't completely take it away. You can try and put it in a position where there's less of that. As we have always said about this, as the game has tried to be made safer, the game is never going to be safer.
How do you grade that one, Professor?
Yeah, that's an A-. I mean, I think he hits it perfectly. And make Golic understanding that you're never going to eliminate concussions from the game, and you're trying to minimize them. But again, it's a contact sport. And I think the slowing down, as Al Riveron talking about, of the speed of the guys running down the field is going to help to a certain degree. But I don't know if it can make up 5%. That's why I think that the kickoffs are going to be really in trouble for next year, because you're still going to have concussions that are going to happen. That's just part of the game, unfortunately. I think it's a good move to consider trying to fix things, but I just think that right now the expectations are going to be too high, and you cannot do it. Again, that's why I think Mike is so on right now. I mean, you can try to fix it, but you can't eliminate it because, again, this is a collision sport and one that is going to be very, very physical. So good grade to Mike Golic on that. Good observation and good analysis. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And, of course, the Mariners take on the A's tonight at 7:05 on 710 ESPN. The game time, of course, is 7:05, and of course, pregame begins at 6. Well, coming up next, we're taking your text questions, so text us at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And, of course, we are taking your text questions. Before we do that, how about a couple stories in the NFL? You hear about Richie Incognito, Mora? I just sent you the story,
yeah.
But I guess, you know, here he is. He retires, right? And, of course, he owes the, by retiring, he's eligible to have to overpay $1 million for a restructured contract that he did. But now he still wants to stay in football. And they were so fed up with him, they just said, fine, go ahead. So they pulled him out of the retirement, which they had exclusive rights to him, gave him the opportunity. And so this morning, I guess he's at a workout facility in Florida in a gym. And so he got arrested for throwing a dumbbell and I guess also throwing a tennis ball at one of the people that was in the workout facility. So they held him over for psychological evaluation. And the alleged victim says Incognito was rambling about the government and screaming at man, get off my, and he used a bad word, playground. And so sounds like things aren't too good in the world of Richie Incognito. And for those who are asking about him coming to Seattle, I think you could say this probably says this is not going to happen.
No, he was able to keep it under wraps there for a little while, but I don't think, from some of the things that we knew of him, I don't think people like that really changed that drastically.
Mm-hmm. Now, again,
not
I know
a great
when
guy.
I think you can see that. I mean, he's already taken Jonathan Martin, the former draft choice who was in San Francisco with Miami, and had him go into psychological evaluation from the way that he kind of bullied him and did all that, in the locker room. And so now it looks like he's back to some crazy tactics, and you kind of wonder. It's like, again, I know interviewing him, he's got great broadcast ability, but right now you kind of wonder what is going on in the life of Richie Incognito. Sounds a little scary.
Yes.
All right, what do we have for text questions? It's 710-710.
All right, the 206 wants to know, could there be some big names on the cutting board after voluntary workouts? Who and could the Hawks get any of them?
There can be. I mean, I think that, this is the time right now where you start to see it. OTAs begin and you start to see the cap casualties. Michael Kendricks, not a guy that Seattle would be going for, was let go yesterday by the Philadelphia Eagles. And so what you wonder about is you start to, break down the cap and everybody else. What defensive linemen, for example, I think there's going to be more defensive tackles. Like, I kind of wonder about Marcell Dareus with Jacksonville. But again, this team is now pretty well stocked up at defensive tackle. They need some pass rushing ends or a pass rushing end, so that could be a possibility. Maybe an outside linebacker can play the strong side. That might be an option to look at. But no, I think that there'll be guys that are going to be released, because as you try to stay under the cap and make sure that you make the cap adjustments, veterans are going to go.
All right, the 360 says, if Robinson Cano is ineligible for the playoffs if they make it, what's the point of bringing him back this season if it will only cut the playing time of the person trying to replace him?
Because the guy in the playing time trying to replace him is not as good as the playing time that you would have with Robinson Cano. He's one of the better hitters in baseball. He's an all-star second baseman. He's a guy that's so valuable to your lineup, and you're the number three hitter. And again, they have other guys that can maybe fill the void, but they're not Robinson Cano. And so the idea is, can you make the playoffs from August 14th to the end of the season without him? And that's debatable, particularly now that you see, what's happening with the injuries and the problems that it causes. And, now you can see for the fact that, they had Gordon at second base and he gets hurt. Now they have virtually hardly anything left in the lineup in the outfield. I mean, that's why they may have to bring up an aging Jason Wirth, who's not hitting well down in Tacoma, just to get some outfield spot. But they're running out of bodies right now. But again, injuries have played a cost of that. Maybe they're going to have to look at the idea. It's like maybe they're getting too close to the plate with 29 guys that have been hit by pitch. But regardless, Robinson Cano has created a void, and he still deserves to come back because he's such a good player.
All right, the 360 wants to know, who would do better, Rabel calling a Mariners game or Rids calling a Seahawks game?
So repeat this again. This would be
have Rabel call the Mariners and Rids call the Seahawks.
I think that you would still think, I would put it as a tie because they're both so good. I mean, Riz is just such a professional broadcaster. Rabel is such a good, smooth broadcaster in the way he's able to do things. That's why, you see the versatility. If he can go from the anchor desk on Cairo to go to the broadcast booth, I think they both would do well. It'd be a little bit different to listen to because, again, their voice are so identified with the sports that they do.
360 says, John, do you consider golf a sport?
Yes, 100%. It's a great sport, and wish I had the time to get back and be able to play it. Unfortunately, I don't have the time, but with golf, I think the sport of it is just the precise nature of it, because I mean it's probably one of the most precision sports. I mean, I guess you can say archery is that way, but again, you have to place the ball so precisely to be able to win, and do it in so many different ways, whether it's going to be a 350-yard drive, whether it's going to be, you know, a chip, whether it's going to be a putt. I mean, it's precision. And again, look at the improvement of the sport with the numbers of guys right now that come back and have done such a good job of being able to build their muscles and build themselves.
509 wants to know, who is the stronger leader for the Seahawks defense, Bobby Wagner or Earl Thomas?
I'd say Bobby, because he's more outspoken. Again, maybe Earl has been and still can be, but I think what you're looking at right now is that Bobby's now emerging as that leader, because again, it's not gone from the secondary to the linebacking core, and Earl is just, he is so into himself as far as just concentrating on the plays and the games and all that stuff. Bobby's a little bit more vocal, and I think he's right now the leader.
509 says, Professor, is there a rule in the CFL that you would most like to see in the NFL?
I don't like the three down part of it, obviously. Too big a field. They're separate type of entities. I mean, the CFL has its uniqueness and it's good. And because they don't have the talent of the NFL, I think they do it in the right way, because they make it more of a passing type of league. And I think they can do it very successfully. In the NFL, you have better players, better athletes, better resumes and all that stuff.
253 says, hey, Professor, with Lockett and Penny expected to return kicks, and Brian Schneider saying we might have three back, what do you think of Baldwin being the third, or even J.D. McKissick?
Being the third returner, the concern that I would have of putting Doug Baldwin out there, he's your number one wide receiver, and that really gives you three potential starters out there that could be at the risk of injury. So I think that would not be the one that he can do, but certainly he's going to be one of the considerations, because I think that you've seen that he's got the ability to do it. I mean, hey, Richard Sherman, if he were here healthy, probably be vying to try to get one of those spots too. But I think that I would not want to risk Doug out there on kickoffs. I know that I've had the debate with others on having Penny out there. Jim Moore doesn't want to put Penny out there. I think it'd be fine to put Penny out there, but no, I think that I wouldn't want to risk Doug on that.
509 wanted to know the chances of the Mariners bringing in Jose Bautista, but the Mets actually just picked him up.
Yeah, no chance right now because he's signed. But again, I think that you're looking in the same vein. I mean, they're probably going to have to sign some type of older outfielder to be able to come in here and fill some of the void. And again, that may be the wise thing to do, but it's also going to take away a spot from a guy in the 40-man roster that wasn't expected.
360 says, which team do you see winning the NFC South? Could you see Tampa taking the division?
No, I don't right now, because I just don't think they can get over the top enough. I still think that, I'm kind of leaning toward New Orleans, because I think they're getting a little bit better on defense. I would not discount Carolina or Atlanta, but I'm telling you right now, that's the best division in football, and they have four potential caliber playoff teams.
The 360 says, John, would the NFL ever consider eliminating the penalty for kicking the ball out of bounds during the kickoff and instead force the receiving team to take it where it goes out of bounds?
No, I would not see them do that, because, again, I think that they're trying to eliminate the number of contacts and hits like that. And if you go get the ball out of bounds, then, now you've got more potential of injury and all that stuff. So, no, I mean, and I think you can see that that would not happen with what they did yesterday and last night, because if the ball goes into the end zone and it's not caught, then it's going to be considered a touchback. And so, no, the fact that it goes out of bounds keeps it out of bounds and keeps it out of play and doesn't get the returner in a position to try to it or to get tackled.
509 says the Seahawks have a brutal home schedule this season. Do you anticipate the Seahawks winning in many of those games?
Oh, I would think so. I mean, again, that's what their strength has been. Maybe not last year, but last year was last year. This year is this year. And, that helps, because if the tougher games were going to be on the road, there's a tougher chance to lose those games. And so if you get the home field advantage and you can get the run game going, you can get the defense going, and you can get the excitement of Russell Wilson and maybe a big play toward the end on defense, then I think that that can be an advantage. But again, it's going to be a tough home schedule, but you'd rather have the tougher games at home than on the road.
360 says, hey, Professor, how many wins do you think the Seahawks get if ProSize is available for all 16 games?
First he has to make the team. I don't think he plays a factor into the win-loss equation. I still think they're a 9 or 10-win team.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Grosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us from now over at the VMAC is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, the big decision came today from the National Football League on the national anthem. And according to the national anthem, the policy is now going to be that teams will make some of the decision on their own players. But if you are going to be a player wanting to protest, whether you want to raise your fist, whether you want to not celebrate, you don't want to, you want to kneel for the national anthem, if you do some kind of a sign of disrespect, the team is going to get fined. And by the league, and the team then has the ability to discipline or do whatever to the player. My immediate reaction is this was a compromise that I don't think was the worst, but it wasn't a good one, because again, the simple thing was to not have the players involved in it at all, have them all in the locker room trying to at least get ready for the game, which of course is very important. But this one was a compromise that was done by the owners, the teams, but not necessarily the players, who are not involved in the process.
Well, I don't agree, John. I think it's I think it was a very stupid move by the owners. I don't understand it exactly. I mean, and this is just the first blush reaction. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but you got Colin Kaepernick suing the league, claiming that he was blackballed because of protest. The league saying that that's not the case. It was simply a matter of him not being worth the effort, not having the ability to do it. Same thing with Eric Reed, who's not suing, though. But this clearly indicates to me that the owners, you know, have now legislated against these protests. So I think they've shot themselves in the foot when it comes to the Kaepernick case. And I think from the other standpoint, sure, it's a compromise. I agree with that. But the people who are most unhappy about it will remain unhappy about it and say they caved the players on this one. So I don't think they solved much of anything. We'll see if and I don't know how many guys we're going to keep protesting anyway. Now you got individual teams that will speak out on what they're going to permit or not permit. I think they've created a real mess for themselves.
Well, see, and I agree. I mean, I guess I'm not saying that they created it, because I think they've already created it.
Right, they're already in it.
Yeah, they're already in it, and they had an out, and they did not use the out. They did not use the get-out-of-jail-free card, or whatever you want to call it, which would have been the simple thing of going back to the old rule. That's why I don't like the decision. I think that there were worse ways they could have gone. Like, for example, if they would have said, okay, you know, players all have to be out there, and if some player wants to show disrespect, it's a 15-yard penalty to the team, and then the next thing you know, the team then would have the ability by team to be able to implement some kind of discipline against a player. That would have been the worst one, because then it takes away everything. But no, that what
well,
I
so
don't
we're in,
like
we're in
about
agreement.
It.
We're in agreement then.
Yeah.
And I think that, like I said, if I'm the attorney for Colin Kaepernick, this is a happy day, because I don't know how the league has a leg to stand on if they claim that the reason why he wasn't playing in the league was because of his protests, when they've clearly legislated against that protest. I just
yeah, but that I don't
Eric Reed, same,
because again,
we'll see about. I mean, I look. He's that's in the courts for the courts to decide, and you know, it's 1 + 1 = 2 as far as I can see. We'll see how it plays out, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason I don't agree with that is because, again, proving a collusion case is really, really almost impossible. Because
but this made it a lot easier, John. I mean, this just made it a whole lot easier.
That.
Sure.
Well, let's put it this way. Roger Goodell and the league came out and announced the decision was unanimous. Well, guess what? Jed York of the San Francisco 49ers came out and he says, unanimous? I abstained. And so it wasn't unanimous. It was actually 30-0-1. And so, you know, even in the announcement, you know, they all weren't on the same page. You know, I thought there was some hope last night, because, you know, going around talking to some of the owners, you know, they were saying, well, you know, there's a possibility we could go back to the old rule, which I said, hey, that's the idea. Now we're talking. But then today, you know, they come back and they go 30-0-1 to come back and at least, you know, make again. It wasn't the worst one, but still, I don't think it's a good one.
No, I think that controversy will continue now.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's the sad part about it, because, you know, there was an easy exit on it, but they did not take the exit, and it's still going to be there. So what happens now if you have a team, you know, that you know, wants to take half its players, and the players decide, you know what, I'm not going to go out in the field, and so now you have half your team not out there, and now you've got a split on your team, which isn't positive for good teamwork.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, again, it's a compromise, but I think it's a sloppy one, a poor one. I think it's going to lead to some legal troubles too. I know you don't feel that way, but you know, we'll see how it plays. It shows their desperation to do something. And look, I almost think they would have been better off by just saying, you know, you've got to stand, and they should have negotiated it in. You know, mm-hmm. they've made some inroads in talking to players about coming up with this fund to kind of, you know, not feed protesting, but about education and things like that. They've made an agreement on that. Either be strong or don't do anything, and they were neither.
Okay, so now I know on Bob Graz and Tom coming up, are you worried that, you know, with Bob Stelton probably being the best athlete of the three of you?
Stelton is the best athlete.
Stelton would be the best athlete, him being called up and then playing one of the outfield positions for the Mariners with all the injuries?
I've seen Bob play softball. I don't think he's going to be called up to play outfield for the Mariners, but if they're looking for someone on our staff, he would be the likeliest guy. Yeah, it's just, but they keep winning.
Yeah, amazing.
They somehow keep winning taking shot after shot. It was unfortunate yesterday with Haniger, and then Segura. At least he wasn't hit by a pitch. Segura mm-hmm. was sliding into home plate and wrenched his shoulder a little bit. But the most important thing is that at the end of the day, they're still getting wins, and that they're hopeful that D. Gordon is not going to be out as long as might have been originally feared. So. There was actually a lot of good news yesterday on a miserable night for baseball in Oakland. I mean, yeah. You know, you had, you know, and the thing is, if you were going to that game expecting as usual easy parking and things like that, nope, you had the Warriors playing the Rockets across the parking lot, and the game started an hour earlier. So you were fighting even ridiculous traffic to get there, which about 3,000 or 4,000 people did. It starts raining, and then it goes into extra innings. It was just a horrible night in Oakland. And for the Mariners, though, they made a lot of big plays. Kyle Seager's play at third base cannot be overestimated or overhyped. It was pouring rain. It was slippery out there, and he just made a spectacular play, a game-saving play. Their defense was strong. Their pitching was good again. 9 games over 500, all is good if they can just stay upright.
Mm-hmm. But now the problem is, I mean, you're talking about 12 position players, and now 4 of them are to whatever degree hurt. And now they're going to probably have to, I have to think that with, remember, they went into the game with only 3 outfielders, and Mitch Haniger gets hurt. He's day to day. But don't you think they have to bring up a Jason Worth or somebody and then take somebody off the 40-man roster?
Well, according to a thing I just saw online, Jason Worth tweaked his hamstring last night, so they're not bringing him up.
Oh.
But they got to bring, I agree with you, there'll be some move that'll be made. Before the game is played today. Someone's already on their way to Oakland. And mm-hmm. because, yeah, you're right. I mean, it doesn't seem like Nelson Cruz is quite ready yet. Vogelback really limits your options in terms of being a defensive replacement. Andrew Romine can only come in one time. He can't play all kinds of different positions. So, yeah, I would expect they're going to make a move today.
No doubt. So what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
Well, we're out at Seahawks minicamp or OTAs or whatever they call them. But we're very excited, actually, because we're going to get a chance to talk with Doug Baldwin at 1:30.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. So Doug Baldwin coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.